and on the Civic Media app.
The following program is produced in a timeshare agreement with Civic Media. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect those of Civic Media. Enjoy.
Heather Foster from Wausau, Wisconsin.
Yes. Woo! I'm a stay-at-home mom, so I like to hang out with my kids and go to museums and the library.
We love the library.
Free time that I have, I like to run errands and sit in my car in complete silence.
Let's see how she does at the end. She got all the way to the end, Paul.
Amazing.
The championship round.
Back with big winner Heather here, $30,050, and we've got this cruise to Iceland we're still playing for, if you can solve the puzzle in the bonus round.
Come on, Heather.
We're spinning for boys. Put that down there, and let's see if you can get a big number on the wheel.
Here we go.
Give it to her, Seacrest.
Here we go, Ryan Seacrest.
It is the
M.
Okay, Heather.
It's the M.
Right down here.
She doesn't know what it
now
is
you
yet.
Chose. What are you doing? We will give it the R, S, T, L, N, and the
if
E.
She finds out what the M is. Oh, the M. I see. Okay.
The M is added.
So get those in there.
The list.
Okay. Now, you know the drill. We need three more consonants and just one vowel.
A-E-I-O-U. Those are the vowels. Come on, Heather.
G.
You got this. For Wausa.
Well, Vanna, what can you share with us?
Come on, Vanna. Vanna's still on.
Yeah, Vanna. Pat's gone. Vanna's on.
There you have it. Take a good look. What are you doing is the category.
Okay.
You'll have 10 seconds.
Bridging
good luck.
Bridging the gap?
Yeah.
Yeah!
Oh, all right. I'm a wheel watcher. I'm a wheel watcher.
And now, here are your Granite Peak shredding, Muskie hunting, Melissa Langban loving, Brad Emanuel groupies, Ryan and Paul.
The Wausau is the show.
Wausau 11 Wausonians, it's the Wausau Business
Show.
Oh, yeah. Episode number 45. Special episode here, Paul.
Yeah, we're going to the ski hill.
Granite Peak takes us to the owners of Granite Peak. We're going to be talking to Charles Skinner and Charlotte Skinner and their executive team, Wisconsin's number one ski destination. And we'll be riding the chairlift with Greg Fisher.
Bundle up, let's do it.
He's kind of the general manager, and so we'll be on the chairlift with Greg. And we are currently in, random, but Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah, here we are. Brooklyn, New York.
We are on the streets of Brooklyn.
The beloved Brooklyn.
Wow, very cool place to be. A couple of days here for work this week. And Brooklyn kind of has a reputation of being where the cool kids hang out, Paul.
Yeah, it feels cool to be here.
You and me, we're not so much, but this is where all the cool kids hang out.
Trying to fit in, okay?
Yeah. So we thought we'd kind of come to you live from Brooklyn. And we thought it might be interesting to see what people on the streets of Brooklyn would say about Wausau.
Oh, you think they've heard of it?
I don't know. Let's find out. You know, people from Brooklyn love Brooklyn. They love being from Brooklyn.
Nothing a Brooklyner loves more than being from Brooklyn.
Within the first 10 seconds of talking to anybody from Brooklyn, they'll tell you they're from Brooklyn.
You'll know immediately.
They kind of wear it as a fashion symbol. Yeah, let's see what they say about Wausau.
This will be fun.
Or we could ask them if they've ever heard of Wheel of Fortune.
Big news out of Wausau for Wheel of Fortune.
Okay, so we're right on Bedford Street. This is the cool place.
Yeah, this is very cool. Spot to be.
There's the L subway stop.
Take the L into Manhattan.
Oh, there's a bar here called Horses and Divorces. Might want to check that place out.
Let's go in.
The Wausau Business Show with Ryan and Paul.
Let's get down to business. Let's get down to business.
Wandering
Brooklyn!
To get the beat on the street.
What's your name, sir?
My name is Mike.
Mike, where are you from Brooklyn?
I'm from Toronto.
Toronto, just visiting?
Yeah, just for this.
Okay, do you know where Wausau is? Have you ever heard of Wausau?
No.
Any idea which state it's in then?
I'm from Canada, so I mean, we, you know,
I've never met a Canadian that you like.
Where's okay. Moose Jaw?
Well, I've heard of the brand. Would you ever consider moving to Wausau, Wisconsin? It's in Wisconsin.
It's in Wisconsin. Yeah.
Center of the state, 90 minutes west of Lambeau Field.
There's nothing I wouldn't consider.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. What kind of work are you in?
I'm a lawyer.
Okay, there's lawyers in Wausau. Good.
Are there too many? What's the per capita?
Per capita? Not enough.
Not enough. Okay, yeah.
Have you lived in Toronto your whole life?
I mean, ish. Do you want to know? You don't know the places I've been in. Yeah.
Just all in Canada?
All in Canada, yeah.
Isn't Brooklyn cool?
Can I say something that might be controversial?
Sure.
It feels like, I'm sure Brooklyn set the tone and created what I'm seeing everywhere now, but doesn't everywhere kind of look like Brooklyn now? Yeah, everybody dresses like
an urban hipster.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, and I'm probably a hypocrite for saying this, but it's like, and then every new build thing that I see where I come from kind of just looks like this, and people dress like this, so it feels too familiar. I think.
It's all the same. Yeah.
Do people dress like this in Wausau?
Sure.
He's got a toque, he's got jeans. I have those same shoes, I'll wear them tomorrow. I'm not kidding.
It's all exported from Brooklyn.
That's it. Yeah. Everywhere is Brooklyn and nowhere is Brooklyn. There is no Brooklyn.
Okay, here we are at the concrete jungle. What's your name?
My name is Mac.
Mac?
Yeah.
It's a coffee shop in Brooklyn. Brooklyn's a pretty cool place, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. How long have you lived here?
I lived here since September, so about 6 months.
You're kind of a transplant?
I am.
From where?
From Chicago.
Oh, okay. Have you ever heard of Wausau?
I have not.
Okay, do you know what state it's in?
Nevada?
Oh, Nevada. Okay, do you know what makes it famous by chance?
I do not.
Okay, do you know how to spell it?
Wassau.
Good call, good call. Okay, nice meeting you. We're from Wausau, Wisconsin, about 4 hours north of Chicago. Are you a Bears fan?
No.
Okay, good, good. We like you. No! Sleep till Brooklyn! Hey, how you doing? What's your name?
I'm Lena.
And what's your name?
Lily.
Lily. Are you guys from Brooklyn?
We're not from Brooklyn, but we live in Brooklyn.
Now. Oh, yeah? Transplants?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Where are you from originally?
Massachusetts.
Okay, and?
New Jersey.
Jersey. Well, I'm Ryan. This is Paul.
Paul.
Hi. Nice to meet you. Have you guys ever heard of Wausau?
Wausau.
Wausau?
No.
Wausau.
No. No.
Say it with me. Wausau.
Wausau. Warsaw?
No. Wausau.
Wausau. No. Yeah, Wausau. No.
Not the place in Europe. Wausau. Do you know what state it's in by chance?
No.
Any clue? Any guesses?
Somewhere in the Midwest.
Oh, decent guess based on our accent, would you say? Or
maybe Ohio.
Okay. Getting warmer. Warmer.
Michigan? Idaho.
What?
Michigan?
What would you say?
Idaho,
okay.
Iowa.
Any idea how to spell it, if you would spell it?
Take a crack at it.
W-A-H.
Oh, okay.
S-A-W.
Okay.
W-A-S-S.
No, W-A-U-S-A-U.
Yeah, there you go. So you never heard of Wausau. So any idea what might make us famous?
No.
Okay, well, it's in Wisconsin, central Wisconsin.
Okay.
You ever think about moving from Brooklyn to Wausau, a little place in central Wisconsin?
Never thought about it.
Any idea what might provoke you to move to a place in central Wisconsin?
Maybe whatever this podcast is.
Yes, okay, good answer.
Here's a strapping young Brooklynite. What's your name, sir?
My name is Reg Ferguson.
Have you ever heard of Wausau, Reg?
Yes, I remember seeing the commercials as a kid. That's the that's the insurance company with the house.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, how long have you lived in Brooklyn?
I've lived in Brooklyn more than half my life. I'm a native New Yorker, but I'm from Manhattan originally. Also lived
cool.
in the Bronx. Thank you.
Real cool.
Yeah, I am cool.
Do you know how to spell Wausau?
Yes, Wausau.
And do you know which state it's in, obviously, then?
Yeah, it's in Wisconsin.
And besides Wausau Insurance, do you know what makes us famous?
Cheese.
Okay. Are you a fan of Wheel of Fortune by chance?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched it occasionally. Are you saying Pat Sajak is from Wisconsin?
No, and neither is the current host, Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, I thought you were from California.
Yeah, but a Wausonian by the name of Heather Foster. Heather Foster is going to be on ABC 7 tonight because she's on Wheel of Fortune.
Oh. Oh, wow.
Hey, Heather. Do you have a watch?
I do have a watch.
Are you going to run home and watch?
No, I have other activities. I have other things. Yeah. Yeah. Can I DVR that, maybe? I can DVR. Does that count?
Sure. Okay. What are you doing in Brooklyn here?
A lot of cool stuff, but specifically, I am a men's fashion consultant.
You're a men's fashion? Well, then no wonder you're dressed so dapper.
Yeah, I'm on brand.
We're trying to find fans of Wausau. Would you ever consider moving to Wausau?
No.
Why not?
I'm from here. I don't want to go colder.
Okay, too cold? Yeah. That's the only reason?
That's the main reason. There could be some others.
What do Brooklyn and Wausau have in common?
Having never been to Wausau, what would you say?
White people. White people.
There are white people among.
White people.
Places have white people. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, nice to meet you, Red.
Yeah, hey,
feel
really
free to.
Hey, people of Wausau, men of Wausau, you probably need my help. Just saying. NYFashionGeek.com. That's all.
No! Sleep! Till Brooklyn! No! Sleep! Till Brooklyn!
Thanks for listening to the Wausau Business Show with Ryan and Paul.
The Wausau Business Show.
Dedicated to Wausonians from Wausau, Wisconsin, USA.
Hello, my name is Maureen Carlson of Greenfire Management Services. Greenfire is a trusted local commercial construction manager. Greenfire provides detailed and innovative services so you can focus on growing your business. We're all about helping companies and communities thrive, so Greenfire is pleased to sponsor the Friend of a Friend competition to support the continual growth of Central Wisconsin. Contact us today to discuss your next construction project. Learn more at greenfire.com. That's greenfire.com.
Why should your business consider Incredible Bank? It's simple. We'll help you do the incredible. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur, a growth-focused business pro looking to expand, or a nonprofit founder dedicated to bettering your community, we have the products, services, and commitment to help you achieve your goals. Discover how we can power your success. Visit IncredibleBank.com or stop by one of our branches today. Incredible Bank, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Jude.
And I'm Jack.
And you're listening to our dad, Ryan.
And Mrs. James.
And I'm Emmy.
And you're listening to our dad, Paul.
On. And the.
No, you say the. Okay.
The.
Wausau Business Show!
The Wausau Business Show.
Oh, sometimes I get a good feeling. Yeah. Get a good feeling, yeah. Oh, sometimes I get a good feeling, yeah. Get a feeling that I never, 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 never had before. Oh, no, no, I get a good feeling, yeah.
Charles Skinner, Ben Bartz, and Charlotte Skinner from Granite Peak Ski Resort at the Wausau Business Show. Welcome, everybody.
How's
everybody doing?
Doing well.
Good. Well, we are looking forward to digging in here. Granite Peak, you purchased it from Neil Mix, and then it went, before that, it was the Olivas.
Right.
And now here we are, many, many, many years later, and we're talking to the Skinners.
Who took the torch and did great things with this hill. I'm interested to talk and ask some questions about it.
Yeah. This is beautiful snow, and we've just got another dump, and we're getting dumped on here finally at this part of the season. That's really great. But this originally started as part of the Great Depression, is why this originally began? Is that going way back? Before even the Olivas owned it. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the community connection has been part of the ski area since its inception. The Wausau Kiwanis Club back in 1924 was the original party that donated land to the state to start the creation of what's now Rib Mountain State Park.
It was all owned by the Kiwanis?
They donated land to the state.
Wow, okay, cool.
The first few acres of land were donated by the Wausau Kiwanis Club. And then
Thank you, Kiwanis. Didn't realize that connection.
Yeah. I didn't either.
Yeah, cool. All right.
And they were the same club that in 1936 raised funds to buy another 40 acres specifically to open the ski area, which then opened in 1937.
One of the first in the country, if I'm not mistaken.
One of the first in the country.
But it was part to kind of get people to work after the Great Depression, from what I understand, right?
Yeah. You know, Stowe was the first ski area to open in Vermont, followed by Sun Valley in Idaho.
Yeah, first ski lift there in Sun Valley, right? Mm-hmm. So this was one of the very first ski resorts in the United States.
Yep, yep.
That is incredible. I never realized. I mean, I knew it was part of PPP or whatever the program was called after the Great Depression to get people back to work to try to jumpstart the economy. And I knew it was one of the first chairlifts in the United States, but I didn't realize it was pretty much the third ski mountain in a skiable mountain before Colorado even.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. That is incredible.
Yeah, we should celebrate that history because I don't think a lot of people necessarily know that. I mean, people didn't even know what skiing was when it opened, probably.
Right. They had to walk up and ski down on two sticks. Yeah. Paul and I have been season ticket holders for a long time. We grew
Since
up
the 90s.
We
yeah.
grew up skiing here. I can remember this being a sheet of ice when I was 5 years old learning how to ski because they didn't really groom it that much back then. And you guys came in right around 99 or 2000 and you stuck millions of dollars into the place. Up until then, the big facility was Lutzen, if I'm not mistaken, in your portfolio.
Yep.
And you came in here, and with the experience of Lutzen and everything else, you really, I'm going to say, turned it around. I mean, in terms of the grooming, in terms of the runs, we had
expansion at the time.
New expansion. Yeah. They poured money into upgrading all of the facilities, and you could see what it was going to become today. What was the kind of motivation behind that? What's your passion that leads you to want to do that? Because you guys have been in this industry for many, many years. And Charlotte, I know that you're part of the United States Ski Association and ski competitively or did in college and things like that. But this is a family affair, as they say. So tell us how this all began originally, if you could.
Yeah, I think investment has been a big part of our model since the beginning.
Oh, good. You have your dog here, too.
We have our
Black Dog Sage?
That's Sage, right?
Hey, yeah. Sage, little black lab. Hello, Sage. We're in the historic chalet, by the way, built in, I believe, the 1920s, was it?
39.
39.
Yep.
Hello.
Yep.
And Sage was born when?
Sage was born in 2020? No.
Okay.
A COVID puppy.
Yeah. One of those.
Sorry, 2021.
Okay. Close enough. Yeah. Everybody was doing it back then.
It was still going on.
Okay.
You know, investment has been a big part of our mission since the beginning. Ski areas across the country that don't invest tend to shrink and eventually will need to close down. You know, my grandfather kind of pioneered this ski industry theme in our family.
Okay. With Lutzen in that area or what? Like
actually with Sugar Hills.
Okay.
So after
Love that gang.
Yeah. Great gang. Unrelated.
Ben doesn't get that joke.
Different era.
Okay, Sugar Hill.
Different era. Right. Yep. He founded Sugar Hills, which is up in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Kind of a similar story. You know, mining had left that area and they needed another economic driver.
Okay.
And so they looked at tourism to fill that void. He started at Sugar Hills, ended up going out to Sugarloaf in Maine. Was a general manager out there for some amount of time. Was actually asked to take a position at Stowe. Didn't feel that kind of that big box corporation was what he was looking for. And he was also from Minnesota. He was born and raised in Minnesota. Wanted to come home. So ended up buying Lutzen from the Nelson family in the 1980s. And shortly after that, in the 1990s, he asked my father, who was a lawyer in New York at the time, to join the business. And so Charles joined in the early 90s for Lutzen. And
your grandfather was doing what, again, prior to coming back and purchasing Lutzen?
Charles can probably speak to his lineage a little bit better than I can, but he was, after starting the ski area in Sugar Hills in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, he went out to Sugarloaf to continue to manage that ski area. He also developed some snow gun technology, snowmaking technology, which was fairly common, I think, of ski area operators at that time.
Cool.
Charles, I think he actually went to law school before he went into ski area operations.
Charles's dad?
Yeah,
obviously.
My father, he went to law school and then joined a small practice in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And he did that for about 5 years or so and was part of the community, part of the chamber. And it was actually the chamber's project that started the ski area, and he was involved with that and ended up purchasing it.
Wow, and he just
just
wound up having a passion and a love that he passed on to you, Charles, and obviously now on to Charlotte as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And so you were a lawyer in New York practicing what type of law?
Just business law. I was actually in the Delaware office most of my time out there while Charlotte's mother was going to school still. And then we decided that lifestyle was not as rewarding as coming back here and working in the family business.
So you all boomeranged back to the Midwest. We love boomerangers. Well, quite a pedigree in the family. Charlotte, you are a graduate of Berkeley undergrad in economics.
Oh. Yeah.
Paul, do you pronounce it economics or economics?
How do you pronounce it, Charlotte? Because I'm an economics major, too. I guess I pronounce it economics, by the way.
I do, too.
You got to call Austin Goolsby and ask him. Yeah. And French undergrad at Berkeley, and then Columbia Business School, an MBA from Columbia Business School. So no bullshit from Charlotte there. Quite a pedigree. So very cool. And then, Charlotte, you boomerang back to the area from San Francisco where you were working at Adobe, which is a cool company.
I've heard of it.
Yep, Adobe and then VMware. Yep.
VMware for all you IT professionals listening. But did that take a level of recruitment from Dad at all? I'm just curious.
You know, when I left the Midwest, I was like, bye, I'm never coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
Going out to California.
Just like everybody. We get you back. We suck you back in, everybody.
But you really do. You know, I think that as you get older and you think about the things that are really important to you and the things that give you meaning in your life, the Midwest has a really great offering. Mm-hmm. I came back, you know, I kind of followed a path that really did revolve around skiing. I mean, growing up, I raced in high school. I grew up on the ski hill following my dad around. When we were skiing together, it was either mostly two situations. One was either I was racing and he was coaching, or he was skiing around observing things and taking a million pictures. And I was just along for the ride.
Right. Ever snowboard?
Yes.
But yep. Skiing is where it's at.
Skiing is a passion?
Skiing was kind of my OG.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't stray from that. You know, I competed in college. I ended up taking some time off from college to compete in ski cross.
Cool.
It ended up giving me a lot to talk about. And, you know, as I kind of made my way through life, I realized that the things that I really want to dedicate myself to is something that can give back, something that feels like I'm connected in a way that really drives purpose. And I think that, you know, I worked at Adobe, I worked at VMware. They're very exciting companies. The things that they're doing are incredible.
Yeah, high growth. Hopefully you got stock options.
You know, I wanted to do something that brought me back to sports in some fashion or another, whether it was skiing or some other thing. That was what skiing did for me in my life as an athlete and as somebody who really enjoyed what that did for my life, and really being able to talk about that is why at the end of the day after I finished business school, I realized that this was kind of my calling. I really wanted to be a part of something that both my father and grandfather built.
Yeah, quite a legacy.
And these ski areas, the value of independence ski areas to the industry of skiing, I think, is really... Sorry, this is my phone going off.
No problem. Natural background noise.
Yeah. Natural background noise.
It's just the soundtrack of Charlotte's life.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but having that legacy is important. Hi, welcome to Granite Peak.
We've got some skiers coming in, which is fantastic.
We're in the historic chalet.
We are in the historic
chalet. Right in front of the big window. But yeah, that legacy is really what drew you into it, and that sense of purpose. And
and I think that independent ski areas, you know, we have the Vails and the Alteras, and they've done a really great job at creating this kind of recurring revenue model for
because they own dozens
skiers.
of resorts.
Yeah. Between the two of them, they own the majority of the resorts in North America.
That's crazy, and that's a private firm?
Vail is public.
Oh, okay.
And Altair is private.
Wow.
But I think the opportunity that we have in front of us is to really grow the sport of skiing, to continue to inspire people to want to take vacations with their families, learn the sport. You know, we need to do something in the winter here in the Midwest.
Yeah, right. There's a finite number of ski resorts in the country, right? I mean, is there a potential to open more, or do we have what we have?
Is it fixed? Are we done growing the areas where this can be done?
Well, I was would say it's definitely not finite, but it's extremely challenging to, you know, acquire additional lands or create a new ski area from scratch. You know, right. Typically in the industry, most recently, the only ski areas that have opened in recent history have been private clubs.
Okay.
You know, where the ultra wealthy buy thousands of acres of land and kind of turn it into a little club for themselves and their billionaire friends. So I think, you know, for public ski areas, it's certainly not, it's not a never situation, but it's become increasingly challenging just with the costs associated with the infrastructure to even get started.
That's wild. How many people are coming through Granite Peak specifically on an annual basis?
Our highest skier visitation was close to 200,000 and 190,000 right post-COVID. We've normalized about 170,000, 180,000. That includes season pass holders, day visitors, overnight visitors.
And if I buy a three-day pass, am I counted as one visitor per day?
Those are visits per day. Yes. Okay. So you would have three visits. Yeah.
So total number of net people that are coming and skiing here on an annual basis, roughly?
We typically measure for ski area in not necessarily in the number of individuals, but in the number of visits per day.
How do you count a season pass holder then?
Every time you come.
Oh, because it's scanned. And you
once per day every time you come.
Got it.
Once per day, no matter how many times I go through the gate, you count me once.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we have about 5,000, 6,000 pass holders here at Granite Peak.
Well, you're looking at two of them.
And how many on the best day of the year, like what's your highest total? Is there, I know some days you're sold out where it says, sorry, sold out, can't sell you anymore.
Yeah, we started doing that after COVID because we felt that as a result of COVID, we had to bring down the capacity numbers. We had to spread things out. And that experience, we actually really liked for the customers. It keeps the lodges within, you know, good working condition and not overly packed. The lift lines are down. The parking is easier for people. So our capacity, I think here we've set at about 24,000. Charles, what's our capacity?
Around 4,000 is the
Benjamin. Ben nailed it.
Ben nailed it. That's why we keep him around.
Ben, what's your title again?
Chief of Mountain Operations. So I have to know what's going on the mountain.
Yeah. Well, he's the guy to ask.
Everybody else has three letters or something like that. Ben's got Chief Mountain Operations. There's a lot to remember there.
I feel like it was longer, actually, in the beginning.
Yeah. He forgot the and development.
There you go. Development.
There's a few other things we could add in, but it gets lengthy.
So let's talk a little bit about the economic impact that this has on the Wausau area, because I can remember coming up from Chicago before we did Boomerang back here, and you guys would have billboards in downtown
in Chicago
coming out of 1994 for Granite Peak and Wausau. And obviously, if you stroll through the parking lot here on any weekend, you see plenty of Illinois, don't call them fibs, Illinois visitors, and people from Minnesota as well.
And Iowa, and other areas.
We just interviewed somebody last week that was from St. Louis, so they're coming from all over. But can you talk a little bit about the economic impact of this facility on the area and region here?
Yeah. You know, I think the last time we did an economic impact study back in 2019, the park itself brought in a total of $30 million for economic impact and $3 million of tax revenue. The ski area's portion of that was $21 million for overall impact and $1.4 million in tax revenue.
So that means $1.4 million in tax revenue for state and local Marathon County. And then what were the other ones? I just want to go through them a little more slowly so I totally understand.
You got to slow down for Ryan.
Yeah, sorry. Well, and I'm trying to walk everybody through it here.
Thank you.
Yeah. $21 million in total sales for the total economic impact.
To the area.
But that means so if you add up all the restaurants that get visits from the people that come to Granite Peak, all the gas stations and
hotels
and everything, it equates to $21 million in revenue generated for the businesses in the area. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, cool.
Places like our friends at the local.
The Mint Cafe.
The Mint Cafe, all our favorites.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that everybody understands that's $21 million bucks coming into our economy from outside the area, and it's cool how they're able to measure that. And I know that those aren't stats that you pulled out of thin air, but it's a independent, objective research firm that came in and quantified all that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she wrote them down. They're official.
I calculated it all with my economics degree.
Yeah. She's a UC Berkeley economist. For God's God's sake.
Go to Berkeley for nothing. No, Ryan, we didn't have to hire anybody to do this. We came up with this ourselves on a spreadsheet. Okay, so that's 21 mil, and then you rattled off some other fancy numbers there. What were the other ones?
Well, the state park total was 30 million, and 21 of that was from the ski hill.
So I'll be over here. You guys just talk econ for a while, could you?
Can you guys excuse us for a minute?
But ultimately, it's like amazing how much business and tax dollars for the community, for Marathon County and for the city of Wausau comes in for not only the tax benefit of it, which goes back to hopefully the people of the area here in Wausau and Marathon mm-hmm. County, but also for the local businesses that are employing so many of those people mm-hmm. here in Wausau and Marathon County as well. So we really applaud
yeah,
that.
Thank you for that.
It's, I would say, the number one economic tourism
driver
and driver yeah. in the area. And one of my favorite things is, I think you guys know Dave Ekman from the Wausau Chamber of
Absolutely.
Commerce, obviously,
yep.
right? But he's, and I've said this before, but he shows a slide, and it's just a landscape of Granite Peak. And in the distance, you have Rib Mountain, and it's just on the landscape, on the horizon, you see Rib Mountain. And then the next slide in his PowerPoint presentation is just flat land. And
as if the mountain weren't here.
As if the mountain weren't here.
Right.
Like, just flat. And he just kind of photoshopped the mountain out. And it really was a profound image of, hey, if this area didn't have Rib Mountain and Granite Peak, where would we all be? Because it adds so much vibrance to the area. And that's why we wanted to continue to do that and continue to grow and expand and do all the great things that you guys have hopefully planned for the future. So can you talk about that?
Yeah. I think
I'll get off my soapbox.
Expansion has been part of, as I look back at the history of Granite Peak and I guess formerly Rib Mountain, expansion has been a big part of every decade since its inception. The Chamber formed the Marathon County Civic Corporation to operate and continue to develop Rib Mountain. You know, as you look at the decades, the continued growth in trails, in chairlifts, in buildings, that was really an important part of driving the success forward. And as that kind of declined, the ski area started to have instability. And so when Charles took over in 2000, his vision for the ski area was actually built off of a plan that was done by SE Group in 1984 to expand the ski area and add a lot of extra terrain. If you look at the kind of the history of ski areas that end up closing or declining, it's because they stop investing.
Okay.
And so, our most important calling really is to continue to find ways to invest in the ski experience so that we can deliver the best ski experience for people. You know, the bar is really set by ski areas that are owned by Alterra and Vail out west.
Mm-hmm.
That idea that people have when you think, hey, I'm going to go on a ski vacation, probably the first thing that pops into your head is like an image of Aspen or
right.
Park City, right? And kind of what that whole experience makes you feel, you know, that winter wonderland, the lights, the snow, the skiing. And so it's really our job to create that same kind of feeling, that same kind of excitement around what we can offer here as a much more affordable alternative to going out west.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think why I really love the Vail and Alterra is I think that it's created this niche in the market for independent ski areas to be able to, they set the bar for kind of the experience that we need to provide, but we can do it in a way that allows people to get into the sport of skiing. And that's a really important role for us to play, is to really continue to inspire that lifelong love for the sport of skiing and taking vacations with your family and friends. You don't need to be an avid skier. You don't need to be an expert. You don't need to be super extreme in order to come and enjoy a vacation here.
An Xer.
And so I think the mountain really changed after Charles bought mm-hmm. the business, and the really major developments in the east and the west have tripled the capacity for skiers probably on the mountain. Is that something like that?
Yeah, the high speed lifts and everything else.
Yeah, I think, the high speed lifts certainly increase the amount of skiers that can enjoy the slopes at one time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you turn your ride from 6 or 7 minutes down to 2 or 3.
Mm, right.
You get a lot more skiing in every day. And, having that additional terrain allows us to spread out the number of skiers. So, if you look at what Rib Mountain's footprint was, back in the 80s, if you put 4,000 people on that, that wouldn't quite be the same experience as what it's like with the additional terrain that we have now.
It might not work.
Well, and yeah. I remember I talked about it before, but it was a sheet of ice when I came up and learned how to ski many nights because they didn't have any grooming. They didn't have any snowmaking capabilities. And so I can remember being a 5-year-old right up here on this little bunny hill when they had the T-bar still.
Oh, yeah, the T-bar over there.
And Ross Ulrich revenge.
Yeah, the rock.
You know, but it made me a better skier, learning on ice, I'll tell you that.
Was the ice because of the snowmaking technology at the time, probably?
Yes. Yeah, so
become less icy with
snowmaking technology has improved dramatically. You know, as Charlotte alluded to earlier, in the old days, every ski area operator had kind of their own setup. They figured out how to make snow on their own. And so there was varying levels.
Take a hose out and just spray it. Right.
That's exactly what Benjamin did when he was a kid.
Yeah, so you can make it happen, but, you know, nowadays there's, you know, a company based in Midland, Michigan that we buy most of our snowmaking equipment from, and they...
Truckloads of it.
Yep. They are dedicated to the science of making snow and progressing that technology forward.
Is it true you can make snow above freezing temperature?
Yeah, so you can technically make snow up to 36 degrees, but that requires 0% humidity, which in Wisconsin does not happen. So
it's a chemistry degree to know how to make snow at that temperature.
We're econ people here.
Yeah, it's a concept called a wet bulb temperature. So, it, you know, similar to how you account for wind in a wind chill temperature, the wet bulb temperature accounts for humidity. So the more humid the air, the longer it takes to convert a water particle into a frozen snowflake.
That's complicated. So it's, okay, let me give you a scenario. It's 34 degrees. There's 15% humidity today. Who makes the call on whether or not we fire those guns up? It's December 1st, by the way.
Ooh, December 1st.
That's late.
That turns that's the late. Heat up a little bit. We got to get going. But
that's what I'm saying. I'm turning the screws a little bit on you.
There's a lot of factors involved, of course. You know, really the biggest thing for us is the amount of runtime. You know, we've got a lot of pumping power and a lot of, you know, every snow gun, you know, has motors and compressors, and getting that stuff all up and running takes a lot of labor and a lot of energy. So we like to do that for windows of time that we can really maximize. And so even while it's possible to make snow above 32 or even at 36 degrees, we typically look for temperatures in and around 28 degrees and below. And then that's when we can be more efficient. And the colder it gets, the more efficient we are.
So you ideally make snow at 28 degrees and below.
And below. Yeah, so the way the snowmaking guns work is as it gets colder, we can add even more water into the mixture. So when you first turn a snow gun on, the key to making good quality snow is the compressed air that atomizes the water and breaks it into really tiny particles that can freeze almost instantaneously.
So you are a chemist by trade?
Or I've studied it for a while. But
engineering?
It,
or?
It's really simple.
Yeah, it sounds so simple.
Using the air to freeze those particles, and then we add in what we call bulk water around that.
Okay.
So we use the same amount of compressed air no matter what, but as it gets colder, we can add more and more water. And that's where we gain our efficiency because, you know, compressed air is really expensive to generate.
A lot of energy.
As it gets colder and colder, we're using the same amount of energy, but producing more snow.
Ben, the Sugar Hill Gang is a famous rap group.
Yeah, you got this, Ryan?
Just so you know.
Understand.
Yeah, my
they
cultural.
Sing Hotel, Motel, Holiday Inn.
You don't know that one?
I know that one.
Okay.
I didn't know who sang it.
That's the Sugar Hill Gang.
You know, my cultural references are a little bit poor.
No.
Well, I'm also, better at talking
your
about snow
references.
Guns.
Yeah.
Really an
and
old
your, and
reference.
Your chemistry references
second
are amazing.
To none.
Yeah.
Second to none. And speaking of sugar, do you ever think about putting sugar in there and mucking it up? Because I'm asking for my four-year-old.
He would love
it. They already love it, but this
sugar
would make it even better.
Gun.
You know, the snow comes out awfully white, but it's good to remember that it is just river water. So
yeah, I tell them
that.
We
don't recommend you eat it.
Yeah. So why don't I ever see snowmaking this time of year? We don't need it. Simple as that.
The base is...
Yeah, we try to, you know, in the coldest time of the year and leading up to Christmas, our goal is to have all of our terrain accessible and open to the public. We try to build a base that will hold us all the way through the spring.
Yeah.
On occasion, we will refresh or put a fresh layer down over the top, but...
Hopefully nature does that for you this time of year.
Yeah, we like to rely on Mother Nature. It's much cheaper.
And who's the meteorologist every year? Is that Justin Lowe or who was that always has the competition to see when the last bit of snow is gone off Granite Peak and then you get an award? You know who I'm talking about? Have you guys heard of that? You know about
this? I've heard
of
that, yeah.
Yeah, one of the local...
Sometimes it's July.
Yeah, it goes all the way to July.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I try to go up there and ski just a little bit every day.
Like July 4th, you'll
shorter,
ski like 5 feet.
Shorter, right.
Okay. Then hit a rock.
Also, while we're on the topic of my 4 and 7-year-old, I am instructed to say thank you because they learned how to ski up here as well. But then they also want to know from you guys, the Skinners here, they said, I said, do you have any questions for the owners of Granite Peak? And they said, yes, pizza or french fry?
French fry.
Oh, good question.
Charlotte's French fry all day.
I'm with Charlotte on that, by the way. I love a good fry.
So when
especially on the Skeel. I grew up eating French fries right here.
Well, Paul, right you didn't learn Chile. With this new methodology that they're teaching the kids these days, but when you learn how to ski these days, when you have your skis parallel,
gotcha.
They're French fries.
Well,
and you go fast.
Yeah.
But when they're pizza, it's in the shape of a triangle. And
we used to
down.
Just call it snow plowing.
Snow plowing. Yeah. What are the biggest challenges that you guys are having, you know, aside from the controversy that kind of goes back and forth and has been going on for many, many years about the expansion? We are pro-expansion. We're pro-Wausau. We are pro-Central Wisconsin.
Pro-economic development.
Pro-economic development here on the Wausau Business Show. It's great for business. It's great for tourism. It's great for everybody. A rising tide lifts all boats. But aside from that all, what are the biggest challenges? You know, obviously marketing challenges or bringing people in. But, I mean, this place is packed every weekend. What are some of the other challenges?
You know, one of the...
Smarty pants.
One of the bigger challenges that we face is the infrastructure and the technology behind ski areas is becoming increasingly expensive.
Okay.
And complicated. So, you know, the chemistry that, you know, in the olden days was just a garden hose spraying water in the air, you know, now turns into a $40,000 snowmaking gun.
And not just one of them.
And not
yeah, you're
just
pumping 45,000 gallons a minute, did you say?
4,500.
4,500 gallons a minute.
But,
wow.
That's wild.
But yeah, it takes a lot of stuff to do that. And, you know, it's difficult to keep it all maintained. And
what about staffing? I mean, everybody that we talk to is like, oh, we can't find people to work. Is that an issue here? Or is this a real fun place for people to want to work?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're fortunate to have a business that folks enjoy participation in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, similar to Charlotte's history of coming back and joining a business because of how it makes her feel and the contribution that she can make to the community. I think a lot of people feel similarly. So we have a lot of young kids that
wanna
learned to ski
yeah.
and enjoyed spending time here, and now they come out and help rake the park jumps at night or serve French fries in the cafeteria. You know, they can be a part of where they have fun.
How many employees do you have?
Equivalent FTEs, let's call it.
Ooh, FTEs are hard to think about because we have such a large seasonal workforce.
It's seasonal almost entirely, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Probably 400 to 500. Kind of at its peak.
Part-time and mm-hmm. full-time between mm-hmm. the two.
Yep.
What's the kind of coolest phrase that you've heard that kind of took over for Shredding the Gnar? Is Shredding the Gnar still a good one? Or
I still use it.
Okay.
I don't know.
Or is that dated now? I know these guys are like, you know, cool thrashers up here.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a thing anymore.
I don't know if I'm one of the cool thrashers.
I don't know. When I was out west, everybody was like dropping in and calling mom. I don't know why that was a thing.
I know dropping in, but what's with the calling mom part?
It was just part of the joke.
Okay.
I don't know.
Let's drop in and call mom.
What are you doing tonight? I'm dropping in and calling mom, or is that when you go off a jump?
Yeah, you're midair and you're calling mom.
Oh,
okay.
Maybe that's how good you are at it. You can have time to call mom.
I'm not just dropping in off this jump. I'm dropping in and calling mom. Cool. Well, what's it like working with your dad?
It's been great, honestly. You know, I think that it's...
What would he say?
Yeah, Charles, what would you say?
What's it like working with your daughter?
It's wonderful. It's a pleasure.
Are you going to give her a raise anytime soon? Or
absolutely.
Going to try to make this awkward now.
As long as those finances line up, we'll be good.
Yeah.
Certainly, he's certainly left big shoes to fill. He's always been a visionary, you know, thinking about what we can do to bring the best experience to all of the skiers in the Midwest. And that really has helped me kind of understand how he has gone about things in his life.
He and you guys have really shaped Midwest skiing. I mean, you guys own really the top three resorts in the Midwest. West by most standards. I mean, there's a few others, Mount Bohemia and some others, but those are really three of the probably busiest and most well-known ski resorts in the whole Midwest, correct?
Yeah, they're the largest and oldest in each of their respective regions, so it's kind of a nice legacy to be able to carry on.
Well, we look forward to getting on the chairlift and talking to some people, and we're going to be talking to Greg Fisher, who, what's Greg's title?
Chief Marketing Officer for all three of the ski areas.
Oh, yeah, and he
general
is.
Manager for Granite Peak.
And cool. He came in from the Northeast, where he was managing some
Peak Resorts.
Peak, okay.
Yeah.
And he's done a really great job of rebranding some of your things, and we're going to talk to him on the chairlift coming up. And then
bundle up.
Let's do a couple of runs, Paul. What do you
say? Yeah, I brought my skis.
We didn't come up here for nothing. We got the season pass. Let's go. Well, Charlotte, Ben, Charles, we really appreciate the time today. Thank you for coming on the Wausau Business Show, and if anything is updated in the future, please come back. We'll be happy to come up and chat.
Make the announcement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for everything you guys do. This is a really great show for the community.
Well, we're glad to do it. Thank you very much for having us. Yeah.
Granite Peak, everybody, on the Wausau Business Show.
Yeah. Drop in and call Mom.
Everybody go. What you gonna do today? Cause I'm gonna get a fly girl, gonna get some spank and drive off in a death OJ. Everybody go hotel, motel, Holiday Inn.
For over 130 years, Ameriprise Financial has helped millions of Americans retire on their terms by providing advice for their unique goals. Stop in today at Strongbridge Wealth Advisors, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Advisors, LLC, and develop a customized plan for your retirement. Call Strongbridge Wealth at 715-849-3697. Office is located at 2711 Stewart Avenue, Wausau, Wisconsin. Visit us online at strongbw.com. Not FDIC or NCUA insured. No financial institution guarantee. May lose value. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
At Reuter Ware, we challenge the notion that sophisticated legal practices only exist in major metropolitan areas. Our team chooses to live and work in communities where many people only vacation or pass through. We enjoy a quality of life and have an excellent work-life balance while still practicing exciting, challenging law in Wausau, Eau Claire, Green Bay, and Wisconsin Rapids. Since 1920, we've been doing what we want and where we want to do it. Find us at RooterWare.com.
Get in touch. Email info at WausauBusiness.com or call 715-9-WAUSA. That's 715-992-8728. 715-9-WAUSA. We'll check the messages on our answering machine soon.
The Wausau Business Show.
Some people got the real problems. Some people out of love. Some people think I can solve them.
Getting on the chairlift, the sixth man we call this, but what's the official name for it, Greg? I always forget.
This is the Comet Express.
Yeah, Comet Express.
And it goes. We're moving right now.
We are not going to put that bar down either. My kids always like to put the bar down, but I never do.
You should put the bar down.
Oh, why? All right. Yep. Jude, Jack, we put the bar down. Don't worry, guys. Emmy, James, the bar is down. So, Greg, you're the chief marketing officer and general manager of all of the resorts.
Yep.
And then GM of Granite Peak specifically. You've done a remarkable job in your 6 years here, has it been now?
This is my fifth year. Finishing up five. Yep.
All right, cool.
And you came from the East Coast, correct?
Yeah, so we were in New Hampshire previously, my wife and I and our two kids, and came out here during the summer of 2020.
Great year.
Yeah.
What are your main marketing metrics for your role as the chief marketing officer specifically for Granite Peak? You know, is it just to drive more and more visitors, or what are the other marketing metrics that you use?
Well, we want to make sure, of course, we want to see more and more business as any business really wants to see. But and for us, it's always maintaining top quality conditions, ensuring that we have ample snow coverage from our snowmaking and, tree line to tree line skiing. We want to make sure that the snow is deep enough. So we always kind of harp on a long season. We're really proud of basically offering the longest season in the state of Wisconsin year after year. So when we do make snow and we're finished up, we make sure that we have a good base that's going to last through any kind of warm-ups that may go on. This year we haven't seen too many of those, though.
No, it's like 6 degrees right now. What are the things that are most attractive about Granite Peak to people coming in from outside the area?
Well, I think it's the consistency of our snow. I think it's the size of our ski area. We're riding one of three of our high-speed chairlifts, which nobody nobody rivals that in pretty much the entire Midwest. Right. You know, so we have superior lifts that make sure that you get more and more runs in you. So when you look at going out west or even out east, we can kind of compare to the amount of vertical that one person would get in a day. You know, we're not as big or as tall as those ski areas.
But is a true mountain. This is not a hill.
This is not
by geological standards. It defines a mountain by about 100 feet, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not really into all the geological stuff, but it definitely is a opportunity going around for us to...
We got
to
lift our feet because we're going around.
Through the bull wheel here, so we're going to go around, so it's a little noisy.
Yeah. We got to keep our feet up because otherwise you hit the gate, right? Where's the gate that stops?
It's over on the other side. Oh, so okay. This one actually has a laser, so they'll probably bypass that, and we'll go right around. If you see it, it's right there.
Oh, get up, Paul. Put your feet up so it doesn't hit the laser.
It's got to raise them that high, but I think I got it. And here's a terrain park on the right. So do you offer the most extensive amount in terrain in the Midwest?
In terms of terrain parks, I think we have one of the largest, if not the largest in the Midwest, and this one here that goes from Upper Dusky into what's called Sky High and then down to Aspen. And we're lucky. We have one of the best, if not the best, terrain park manager in Rye Bauman.
You guys having fun? This guy runs the place. Yeah?
As we're going down, yes.
Going down now. Yeah, we're just doing a loop-de-loop.
Yep. So with our terrain parks, the thing that I love about it is that we have a big one here in Aspen that's really, you know, geared for more of your experts. And then we have a smaller one called the Grom Park, and that's off of our Blitzen Chair. And that's for little kids and also for grown adults who are just not really too sure about themselves and want to stay low to the ground. And it's a nice progression. We do a cool kids event called the Grom Jam Series.
Yeah, kids love that.
Which is a 12 and under event. And it's not really geared towards competition. It's more geared towards camaraderie and fun. And we give everybody prizes and stuff at the end of it.
When was the last time you saw somebody do a yard sale?
I saw last weekend, for the record. He lost all four components. Both skis, both poles, way up the hill.
It is essentially a part of skiing. You know, I think everybody has had at least one good yard sale that they have a good story about. Those snow snakes that we come out of nowhere and catch an edge.
For those of you that don't downhill ski, a yard sale is when anyone wipes out so bad that they lose both skis, both poles, and everything.
Sometimes a hat or a helmet.
Everything goes everywhere, and if you are on the chairlift, you're obligated to yell at them, yard sale!
And hopefully they're not hurt, for the record, but assuming they're not, they get up, and it's all in fun.
They're not hurt. First you check the safety, and then you yell yard sale.
Right.
Yeah. But what events do you have coming up? Because last year you had the U.S. Championships here for, what was that called again?
The U.S. Masters. So that was a pretty big event for us here that ran early February. You know, we're getting towards middle February now, going to be going into March. March is a time frame where we have a lot of family-friendly events. So we have Mardi Gras coming up March 6th, 7th, and 8th. And then we go down St. Patrick's Day. We're going to have a mogul competition.
Cool.
And
paint the moguls green?
Yeah, they're going to be painted green a little
nice,
bit.
Cool.
We're going to have some green beer.
Nice. Whatever happened to the ice bar? Do you ever do that anymore?
Will come out during the pond skim.
Oh,
so
cool.
We're going to do Bone and Joint, actually, is the title sponsor of the pond skim this year. It's going to be
apropos.
Yeah.
It's going to be themed with pink flamingos. And it's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to go on the last weekend of March. I think it's the 29th or 30th.
They make a bar out of ice. And you don't need to ski to come to this stuff. You can hang out and watch Brad Emanuel on the back patio, which is awesome. My favorite time to be up here is when it's like 35, 40 degrees on a spring day.
Yeah.
And Brad Emanuel is playing out on the back patio. It's the best.
Hopefully we have a few days ahead of us like that coming our way.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think, March is some of the best skiing and best times for families to get out because it is a little bit warmer out and there are a lot of fun things going on. So
yeah, awesome. Well, Greg, here we are back at the base camp. Let's it up. Greg Fisher is the general manager and chief marketing officer of Granite Peak Ski Resorts. And thanks for joining us, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
Right.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Round
thanks,
of applause.
Greg. All right. That was about 8 minutes, a round trip,
round
just
trip.
For the record. In case you want to go any Granite Peak trivia, everybody.
It started with the whisper.
Yeah, pretty good episode, Paul. I'm glad we were able to do something from Brooklyn, something different this week for Wausaunians.
Yeah, and it begs the question of a comparison between Wausau and Brooklyn.
Oh,
here
okay.
On the streets.
Oh, look at this, by the way. That's pronounced Mi Amor, this food truck here.
Yeah, wow. I love in Spanish.
A lot of cool food trucks and things going down. We're technically, I think, in Williamsburg, Brooklyn now.
Yeah, we're in Williamsburg. Pretty cool part of town, no doubt about that. Here's what I want to do. I want to do a quick comparison. I have a couple of questions for you. Comparing the differences between Brooklyn and Wausau.
Oh, a game? Is this like a game?
Yeah, and at the end, we're going to crown the champ. Is Wausau better based on this criteria, or is Brooklyn better?
Okay, as we walk down, I believe it's pronounced With Street.
So the first one is...
Question number one. A lot of good art here. Sorry to keep interrupting.
No, it's a lot to see. All right, which city is further north? Brooklyn, New York, or Wausau, Wisconsin?
Further north, latitudinally?
That's correct.
I would go with, I don't know, Wausau.
Wausau takes the first one. 1-0. It's 45 degrees north.
I was going to say
40.
Whoa, beat him by 5 degrees.
Yeah, beat him by 5 degrees. Now, this one's kind of easy, but you can't get away from it. Population. Which population is bigger?
Well, come on. Brooklyn.
Okay, so it's 1-1. Interesting fact. Here's a question for you. Is Brooklyn 44 times the population of Wausau, 66 times the population of Wausau, or 88 times the population of Wausau?
I'm going to go with B, 66 times.
Nailed it.
Oh, really? What's the population of Brooklyn?
It's 2.6 million.
2.6 mil, okay. Oh, there's some guy on a moped in the middle of February here. They're delivering food. And did you notice what they put around their hands, Paul? They have, like shopping bags around their hands, these teams of Uber Eats drivers. Okay. Okay, so
okay,
I'm...
So it's 1-1.
What do you mean? Am I playing against myself?
Brooklyn as compared to Wausau.
Okay.
1-1.
Okay. Oh, Brooklyn v. Wausau. Okay, got it.
We're going to see who wins. All right, question three. Who has the biggest lake?
Who has the
Brooklyn
biggest
lake? Wausau.
Are there lakes in Brooklyn?
That's what we're finding out.
Maybe this guy. I'm always scared to, just walk up to random people in a big city because I don't know if they'll beat me up.
Exactly. You got to be careful.
Big biking culture here in Brooklyn.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a guy on a city bike. That's a bike where they... I guess we have those in Wausau where you can kind of down by the Riverwalk, you can rent the bike for a little period of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Right. Is this the last question?
Biggest lake. We got two more after this. So the biggest lake is Prospect Park Lake in Brooklyn.
There is a lake.
And it's 55 acres.
Acres, yeah. They measure lakes by acres, okay.
And, of course, Lake Wausau is the biggest lake in Wausau, and that's 1,851 acres. Another point for Wausau.
Wausau wins. Okay, not a whole lot of water. More concrete-based here in Brooklyn.
Two more in this close-heated rivalry here.
Okay, what's the score now?
It's 2-1 in favor of Wausau.
Okay, we've walked, just so everybody knows, we've walked from 9th Street, and now we're on 7th Street. So we've walked a couple blocks here as we're comparing Wausau to Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Yep, and now this one might seem a little easy again. We've passed by many restaurants.
Beautiful couple here. Embracing. You know what's tough here in Brooklyn is if you're single, I heard.
That's what I heard.
It's not easy to be single. Everybody thinks that when you live in a big city, if you're young and you're single, a lot of construction going on here.
Jeez.
A lot of everybody thinks, but it seems like all single people in the city here complain about being single. And people like in Wausau complain about being single in Wausau because, it's a small town. There's not enough single people to go around. Well, here we are in New York City, Brooklyn, Williamsburg. And people here are, you overhear them, Sex in the City was all about how hard it is
in the city, right?
To be single in the city. It's hard to be single anywhere. Okay, so the score is
2-1 in favor of Wausau. This one might be easy. We've passed a lot of them already. Who has more restaurants, Brooklyn or Wausau?
Oh, hang on. I got another one. Which city is cleaner, Wausau or Brooklyn?
Well, you
got
to give that one to Wausau.
Jesus.
Trash everywhere.
There's
here.
A lot of trash on these streets, sidewalks here. Okay, so this one is the last question.
Yeah, the score is, if you count the cleaner, Wausau's already won. But
okay.
Obviously, Brooklyn has more restaurants, so it's 2-2. Yeah. Which elevation is higher, Brooklyn or Wausau? This is for all the marbles.
Well, I know that Granite Peak is an elevation of about 1,000 feet. It's a rib mountain.
2,000 feet.
Rib mountain?
Yeah, 1924. But
above,
don't count that. Which city is a higher elevation?
Well, I would say Wausau because it's away from the sea level.
So Brooklyn is at 220 feet above sea level.
Okay.
and Wausau, Wisconsin, USA for the win is at 1,201 feet above sea level.
You hear that, Brooklyn? Wausau wins.
We did it, guys.
All right. Well, who's coming up on the show next week, Paul?
We have Patrick Phelan IV coming onto the show, and he played in the Bob Dylan movie, A Complete Unknown. He plays a guitarist, Luther Perkins.
Yes, and this is Academy Award nominated, and next weekend is the Academy Awards.
Perfect timing.
He played it with
Timothy Chalamet, I believe.
And they recorded here in New York City.
That's right.
That's not why we're here.
Coincidence.
But the Academy Awards next week on, I believe, ABC, starring Conan O'Brien is hosting this year.
Oh, looking forward to that.
Also a New Yorker.
Right.
And you know, one thing, as things continue to pop in my mind as we walk down the streets of Brooklyn here, Paul, is... It doesn't seem at all unusual to anyone that we pass that we're carrying a microphone and just talking.
As comparing the two, I'd say we get a lot more strange looks in Wausau when we do this than we do in Brooklyn.
Yeah. So until next week with Academy Award winning actor? No, he's from a movie that is nominated for an Academy Award. Patrick Phelan will join us next week on the Wausau Business Show. I think we should bid adieu to Brooklyn. Can't wait to be home.
Yeah, let's get back to Wausau, Wisconsin, USA, after all.
Miss you, Wausau.
Let's sign out from Brooklyn.
Okay, well, there's the Brooklyn Bridge. We're going to beam from the Brooklyn Bridge back all the way to the tippy top from high atop Rim Mountain. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Paul.
And this has been a Wausau Business Show transmission.
The end. Street to rock around, that's right, on time is tricky. It's tricky. Rock around, that's right, on time is tricky.
This has been a Wausau Business Show transmission. All rights reserved 2025.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Stacey Lynn. As more and more federal workers from multiple agencies get let go, President Trump up this morning early on Truth Social, praising the work Elon Musk has done so far, but says he would like to see him get more aggressive. CBS's Willie James Inman on some of the latest cuts.
The Pentagon is expected to fire at least 5,400 probationary workers as part of an initial round of layoffs. A hiring freeze and a review of personnel needs will follow.
Correspondent Nancy Cordes reports the IRS is also seeing massive layoffs right in the middle of tax season.
CBS News obtained an email that was sent to IRS workers this week. It said those being fired were newer probationary employees who were not deemed as critical to filing season. Lily Batchelder is a tax policy expert and served as an assistant treasury secretary under President